Welcome to Radio Who, What, Why. I'm Jeff Scheckman. Over the course of the past campaign, we heard over and over and over again about Trump being the ultimate outsider, that his policies were a threat not only to the established order, but to the people and institutions of both parties that are often referred to as the permanent government, a part of what my guest Peter Dale Scott calls the deep state, the forces inside government, in intelligence agencies, and in the economy that really control the levers of power. But is Trump really that outsider, or only a fig leaf to cover up, or at least paper over, a far deeper link to the established order? No one would understand this better than Peter Dale Scott. Peter Dale Scott is a former Canadian diplomat, a professor emeritus at the University of California, Berkeley, a leading political analyst and poet, the author of numerous books, and it is my pleasure to welcome Peter Dale Scott back to Radio Who, What, Why. Peter, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, I'm always glad to be connected to Who, What, Why.
Let me ask you, first of all, are you surprised by any of this? I mean, as you've watched the whole Trump phenomenon unfold from the primaries...
I was sure for about 10 days that Trump was going to be the winner. And then I was a sucker for these beautiful maps that they put on, and when I saw that the chances of Clinton's election ran from 70% to 84%. I fell for that. But up until about 4 days before the election, I had been convinced for a long time Trump was going to win.
What made you think that?
Because I believed that he was reaching people that the media weren't. And particularly, I felt that... I decided this guy, you know, he looks stupid to us, but I decided he's actually very smart, and he was doing a kind of jujitsu, and he was making the New York Times and the big TV networks perform in a way that helped him.
Which really brings us to the question of the degree to which he is an outsider or not, whether he represents really a change from the forces of the deep state, the internal forces, the permanent government, or whether he's just really a front in some ways, a fig leaf for all of that.
No, you know, I think he's no man can be a complete outsider and become a candidate to the presidency. And we've had people who've come out of nowhere. I mean, that was Goldwater, Reagan. But there is always this is why I talk about a deep state. And, you know, the standard election, this one was not quite standard because we had a millionaire running. But in the standard election, first of all, the candidates, the real primary is to get money. And that primary selects out the people who will be the candidates, the private primary before the public one. And in this election, we had one man who could fund himself in the early stages, Trump, but not in the final stages. That's why there is a powerful inside backing to Trump, which I'll get to in a moment. But we also had Bernie Sanders, who did a remarkable job of getting small amounts of money from a lot of people. One thing this election tells us, which I think we knew anyway, and that is that the global system is in real trouble. And a lot of people are not being satisfied by it. And the people who are not being satisfied are speaking up all over the world. So that when we think about what happened here, we have to think about Brexit, and we have to think about the challenges to the EU from inside the EU, Poland, France, etc. It's happening all over. And if you do believe in democracy, and I'm not sure I always do, but I do right now. I think democracy corrects things, and the corrections are often very painful and sometimes do stupid things. But if you believe that the world has to get to a different world, and that's been my whole life, we can't go on with the status quo, this is the way we stumble towards a better world. So... I'm not gloomy. Hillary said her last speech is one of her best. We have to approach this man with an open mind, and I'm sure within weeks, if not, well, when weeks is taking over, we're going to be very angry with him. But I don't know what we'll be angry about, because most of what he was saying in the campaign was to get elected, which he managed to do. And I think he proved he is a politician. He knew how to get elected. His years of TV have given him skills which trumped, I have the only verb, his skills trumped the know-it-all opinions of people like David Brooks in the New York Times. You know, I think American capitalism needs a kick in the pants, and Trump is a kick in the pants. So I'm not, everyone's angry, gloomy, I'm none of those.
To that extent, do you expect that ultimately what he's going to do is going to be fundamentally different, or that it's going to even satisfy those people that were his most ardent supporters?
Well, first of all, every candidate disappoints people. But I think, I've said on my Facebook page, and I'll still say it, that he will have to operate within the parameters of the deep state, and that's always been the case. Let's go back, though. We have to see the way in which Trump is. There are insiders backing him. I think it was very interesting that he ended up with this. His finance chairman was Steve Mnuchin. And many people may not have heard that name before. Steve Mnuchin, M-N-U-C-H-I-N. If you go Google for him, he was Goldman Sachs. And he was he took over the campaign when Trump's own money was beginning to run out. And not only was he Goldman Sachs, which is like Clinton appointing Robert Rubin to be Treasury Secretary, before that, he was Skull and Bones. So people who, I don't think that Skull and Bones is the only center of the deep state. The deep state is pluralistic in its own way, and there are many equivalent. There's the Porcellian at Harvard and so, Princeton, all of these places. But yes, the campaign, as it got more and more serious, moved in towards the center to get funding from the deep state. And so there is a mixture of new and old in Clinton, and he has a whole agenda of things to do. And the question is, which ones will trump the others? Mm-hmm. The verb Trump is very, very relevant here, because he cannot begin. You cannot simultaneously reduce taxes for the wealthy and also arrange for a wall to be built along the border in Mexico. That was pure poetry. That appealed to the worst in a lot of Americans. That wall is not going to be built, and it's just a symbol for the things in his agenda. It's a mixture of the possible and the impossible. Can I say what I hope?
Sure,
will
go
be
ahead. His go ahead,
primary
please.
Agenda?
Please.
Now, this is me as a poet speaking, a utopian, but I hope that Putin invites him to Russia, to Moscow, before he becomes president, and that he goes to Moscow, because I do think, I felt this all the way through, that the one good thing, as opposed to Hillary, was that Hillary and Kerry, who, the only candidate, serious candidate I ever knew, and I worked for him in Washington for 6 months, but they're terrible on Eastern Europe. There's a campaign about Crimea and what we've been doing in the Ukraine, and now that NATO is having exercises in Estonia and Latvia. This is all terrible, should stop immediately. And Trump is the man who could do something about that. And I'm not sure he will, but, Hillary says approach him with an open mind. I think with an open, I just hope he will develop it. In Russia, they're very happy that he was elected, and they have reason to be. The Russians have very good reasons to be frightened of America. We've got troops in Estonia. We have troops in Afghanistan. They see themselves being surrounded. So the most hopeful thing is Russia. But then we come to two other things, which are Syria and Iran. Now, Trump has been talking out of both sides of his mouth when it comes to Syria, because on the one hand, he wants to improve relations with Russia, and the other, on the other hand, he wants to do more than the worst that we've already done in the Middle East in general, in Syria in particular. And he's going to have a face, a choice, whether he's going to pursue a diplomatic path with Syria, which he will have to if he wants to improve his relations with Russia, or the military one, because he has said things that really sound very stupid when it comes to his strategic notions. I mean, what he said about Mosul, for example, that we should have done it in secret. I mean, that only makes sense to an IQ, somebody with an IQ of about 60. And, I think the military as a whole, the troops probably voted for Trump. But of course, he may get a new Joint Chiefs of Staff, but the present one, they're not going to take his kind of advice. But he may not. I mean, because I think he's smart. I think he will work with the Joint Chiefs. But I don't want to see a military solution to Syria, because I don't believe there is one. Just like there never was a military solution for Vietnam, and it's outrageous that it took so long to realize that. And there isn't a military solution for Afghanistan. We're the last of the great powers to have that experience. Russia and Britain learned it before us. So I hope he will seek a diplomatic solution there. And then we come to Iran, because he said he wants to scrap the Iran agreement. Well, what's he going to do about whatever he does about Iran? I hope will be conditioned by what he does about Russia, because, believe me, as we have America has surrounded Russia from the east and the west, Iran is very important to Moscow. They're the border country that they have been able to work with, even though it's got Ayatollahs nominally in charge of it now. So the Iran deal, he can do something unilaterally and just scrap it, but then what's that going to do with his relations with Russia? So all the way through here, we don't know. I'm just sharing my ignorance with the audience.
I mean, I guess the other part of the question is, relative to all of this, Peter, is the degree to which he's a skilled enough politician to keep all of these plates spinning, to keep all of these different groups satisfied while he does all of these things, because clearly it's going to be a balancing act.
Yeah, well, I think we probably the first thing we want to see is, who does he surround himself with? Who will be his chief of staff? Who will be his secretary of state? Who will be his attorney general? And then, of course, he'll probably assemble a coalition of people who start fighting each other to some extent, because he's been so all over the map. Certainly, I think there's going to be a huge gap between what he said he was going to do and what he actually does. That's where I feel the deep state will kick in. And, if a president gets one thing done, like Obamacare, it's a huge achievement, and with Congress the way it is. Let's talk about him first. He does certainly have skills, and they're, I think, conflicted. I think he suffers from egomania that's going to hurt him a lot. It hurt him at times in the campaign. But he's also he's good at reaching people, much better at reaching people than we snobs thought he was. And he's also he's smart. And if he really wants to last 4 years, he will make some mistakes and hopefully learn from them and stumble his way. We just don't know. I don't know which of his whether his ego or his smarts will dominate. I predict that both will be part of the drama for the next 4 years.
Talk a little bit about what you see as his smarts. His smarts how? I mean, certainly he hasn't shown it in a willingness to understand or to confront or to embrace policy, either foreign or domestic.
No, I don't think he's really been focused on policy. He's been focused on getting elected, which he managed to do. And, you know, we all laughed at him. Everybody from in the primaries, they didn't think he'd win the primary, but... He was on to, his smart was that, you know, he does television. His smarts come from his having done his TV show, in my mind, not from the art of the deal and his experience in real estate, which was, he certainly, it was successful in the name, in the sense of putting the name Trump all over the place. And maybe he really did, you know, people said he doesn't even want to be president, I think. No, I think his ego is such that he did want to be president, and pasting the name Trump on buildings all over the place helped him get there. That's the kind of smarts he has, and it's of no use at all being president. So whether he can now turn around, he ran a TV show that was successful for many years, and that means you have to work with people. So he certainly has worked with people. He's put together deals, and whether, you know, if he's a smart, if he's a smart dealer, next 4 years, you know, yeah, I'm not talking about the reasons why we should be so scared of this man, because they're there, believe me, but I think it's our job now to see what is the what. Not only how to, in the end of this show, we want to say what 2020, and I want to talk about Elizabeth Warren, because I think this election has, to me, vastly increased the chances not only that Elizabeth Warren will run in 2020, but that she'll be elected, because I think that whatever the, maybe I'll just say a bit more about that. I think I'm going to talk about the possibilities for Trump, but I think that it's, I think he's a one-term president, or I hope he's a one-term president. Of course, I hoped that Nixon and Reagan would be one-term presidents, and I was wrong both times, but I think he is so inexperienced. And I think probably has given so little thought to his policies that, well, let's just say I hope he's a one-term president. And then I think we get Elizabeth Warren, not just as a candidate, but as a president.
Talk a little bit finally about what do you think that the Clinton campaign and the Democrats and that everybody with, that was so smug, as you talked about before, about how this was going to play out, what did they all miss?
Well, I think there's been, we have to say a bit about what's happening to both parties here. You know, the Republicans used to be the party of the rich, and in this campaign they were the party of the uneducated. And the Democrats used to be the party of the unions and labor, and they really lost that, I think, going back to McGovern. The Democratic Party opened itself up to reach the middle classes and the techies and the educated. It's almost a role reversal. And I do think that whatever Trump does, it's going to have put great stress on both parties in Congress. I mean, take the Supreme Court, for example. That's going to be a very high priority for him to get somebody that you and me will absolutely hate. And to do that, they have to be approved by the Senate, and there is still a filibuster. Now, what's going to happen to the filibuster? Some Republicans will want to get rid of it so they can get their agenda, and some are going to want to fight it. I think the Republican Party is at the point of splitting into two, but I also think that the Democrats, the Sanders people, are still there. I hope that they thrive. I mean, they are the soul the heart and soul of the real Democratic Party to me, as opposed to the kind of new Democrats that was, both parties are sick, is what I'm trying to say, really sick right now, and threatened from within by the rebellions against their own leadership.
Are we going to see a permanent realignment of the parties, in your view?
I wouldn't be surprised to see if we see a new party coming out of the rubble of, that's what it is, of the Republican Party. It's a bit like slavery back in 1850, and we suddenly got the Republicans, and you got a one-term senator was elected president, Abraham Lincoln, and we just did it again with Obama. But I think both parties are clearly... This is, I would say, an exciting time. And for people like me who say we've desperately got to get to a different America, times like this are going to be times where very bad things happen, but also times of opportunity for something new and better to come out of the mess.
Peter Dale Scott, I thank you so much for spending time with us on Radio Who, What, Why.
Okay, thank you. It was Jeff. I loved your questions. I love talking to you.
Thank you for listening and joining us here on Radio Who, What, Why. I hope you join us next week for another Radio Who, What, Why podcast. I'm Jeff Shekman. If you like this podcast, please feel free to share and help others find it by rating and reviewing it on iTunes. You can also support this podcast and all the work we do by going to whowhatwhy.org/donate.